You guys know I'm crazy about Audible because it offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Audible really is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment, with female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, multicast productions with immersive sound design, and traditional audiobooks. Audible has you covered for any type of excitement that you're looking for. In fact, right now I'm listening to The Second Husband by Kate White. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. That's audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. With four daughters and two on a dance team, I can tell you we go through a lot of mascara in my house. But I'm crazy about L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, which catches every lash from corner to corner for maximum volume. If you're looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank, this is yours. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. I've been using it for about 2 weeks now, and I feel like my eye has completely opened up, and the girls are crazy about it too. They've got a tapered brush to catch every lash, one of the best mascara wands that I've ever used. And like I said, this luxe appearance of this gold package, you got to get it. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara. You're going to love it.
The amazing Kate Casey.
Hi, welcome back to another week's episode of Reality Life with Kate Casey. I've got a great, great episode in store this week. I tracked down Marguerite Perrin, who appeared on the infamous Trading Spouses episode 10 years ago when she referred to herself as a god warrior. I spoke with Christina Gibson from Bravo's hit show Summer House. I also watched American Gypsy Wedding at the request of my friend Josie, who blow dries my hair. And Eric Goldie, who is a New York-based writer and producer and happened to be Carol Radswell's old assistant. We talked about Real Housewives of Beverly Hills and also the Bravo show Timber Creek Lodge. So here we go.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. If you're looking for new style inspiration, Saks.com is the place to go. Saks.com is making it easy for me to shop for the spring with their selection of chic clothes and accessories. Right now, I'm looking at Saks.com so I can find my new going out vibe. I'm looking for a breezy Zimmerman dress for an evening cocktail party. And for my upcoming conference in Los Angeles, I'm looking at bright Chloe blazers because I'm pushing myself to wear more orange and pink. Saks.com will inspire you to shop for everything on your agenda. So find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
So everybody, I'm delighted to tell you that I've tracked her down, Marguerite Perrin, from the most talked about Trading Spouses episode, which oddly enough was on about 10 years ago. It's hard to believe it's been 10 years. But in 2005, Marguerite Perrin appeared on the now infamous episode of Trading Spouses when she swapped the lives with Jeannie Fisher for a week. Jeannie Fisher was an astrologist. Marguerite's a devout Christian, and she was switched with Jeannie and her family. And after a week together, they were both given $50,000, but they were allowed to decide how the other family was supposed to spend the money. And what happened once they came home became television history, because Marguerite sort of unloaded after a week away from her family, and she's most well known for talking about being a god warrior. So welcome, Marguerite.
Hello, you're putting it mildly. Welcome. Nice to meet you, Casey. Okay, so, I'm sorry. Girl, I'm terrible with names.
That's okay. Most people screw it up anyway. Oh, it's hard. Perfect. It's hard to have two first names for a name. It's confusing.
Well, it's cute. It goes with you.
So tell me about that experience. Now that you look back 10 years later, can you watch it and laugh, or do you look back with horror?
Well, there's certain parts that I like, I am in horror of, and they're not the typical things that people like they feel. It's the things that like my husband might expose. I'm the only sexual partner he had, things like that. That's the kind of thing when I look back in horror, or but I see humor in it. I see sadness. I was like really uncomfortable. And when you're on a show like that, you become looked at like with a magnifying glass. So it's like, I enjoy looking at it when I see the humor part and when someone really gets it and like thinks outside the box and said, okay, she's a little uncomfortable and maybe she's not like, like this crazy, off the wall, color outside the line. I am a color outside the line kind of woman. I am that, but I would like to say that was a lot of acting, but it was explosive and I was mad. I was like not in my comfort zone at all. So looking back, I see all different kinds of things, but I hardly ever watch it. I only watched it one time, and that was whenever it actually like aired. But I, of course, I see the commercials and the little spoofs on me and things like that. So I do watch that.
And you did say, you did tell me once that you think that the parodies are hilarious.
Oh, girl, I have laughed over that. I'm telling you, I could be in my darkest moment. And I'm telling you, I watch one of those and I'm like, oh, my goodness. And they're very creative and funny. And I forget I said some of those things that they say. And it's hilarious. I mean, I don't know. I have some of my favorites out there. But yeah, and they still do them, which is surprising. So surprising.
So during that week, you're not allowed any access to your phone, correct? You're just totally separated from your family.
Yes. You don't have any idea where you're really going until you get to the airport. So you pack your clothing for like, you know, whether it be cold or hot or whatever, you have no idea. So you give up your phone, you have no contact, and you move into another house.
Now, how did you find out about the opportunity?
I didn't really. A friend pretended like she was me, called into the producers, and they wind up calling me. And I had no idea they were calling. And I got on the phone. And I thought it was a joke. And I just said, this is a joke. I thought it was her husband. I said, put him on the phone. And anyways, they told me, no, this is rocket science. And we're in California and blah, blah, blah. And they asked me to describe my family. And I said we were kind of like I had a Lolita, one daughter that was like a Lolito, and one of them like Anne of Green Gables, and I kind of like the Bundys, and I don't know. So they were like, we just want to meet you. And so I met with them, and by myself. I didn't even tell my family. And the rest was like, we didn't get casted the first time. A wonderful family that was more of like a Cajun family was casted. And I watched it and I was like, oh, I see why they picked them. And it was like a year later, they called us and they said, would you be interested in doing this? So I don't think that I was supposed to be going with Jeannie and that household, the Fisher family. That was kind of like an accident. I think they were going to put me, well, I learned that they were going to put me like kind of with a bodybuilding family, put me on rice cakes, make me exercise, and it would have kind of been funny. This didn't turn out, and anyway, we kind of like were mixed because they weren't my like polar opposites or anything, and they didn't really know that I would really have a problem in this kind of household. I was calculating enough with all the questioning not to let them know how heebie-jeepy I would be if we were like talking about certain issues. So I knew that they would put me with that kind of family. And lo and behold, I wind up being in that kind of family anyways. So
at the end of the week, you guys have to meet and you kind of go over, it seems like they almost push you to say what you think is horrible about the other people's family life.
Yeah, like, they kind of, you know, in interviews, they, you know, they ask, they know that there's certain issues that come up and they're like, they'll say, well, this person said this and how did you feel about that? You know, this kind of thing. I mean, it was like questioning like that. Now, it was not scripted. I mean, now when you're cutting at it, I'm like, okay, if you're going to cut and edit me, why don't you take 100 pounds off my body, not off my character here. But that's how I felt when I like watched it. Cause it was, I mean, I said all those things, but not necessarily all in one sentence kind of thing. But
right.
Anyway, the thing with this, with, wait, what was your question, girl? I'm off the subject. I'm attention deficit. I'm looking at my spark drink over here and I'm fixing to take a sip.
So when they have you meet with they had you meet with Jeannie at the end of the week, and then, you sort of go over what you thought about each other's family life, but then they give you $50,000. And were you happy with the way she decided your money should be spent?
Yeah, she took in consideration. I did the show. That was the whole point of me doing the show, because my insurance would not pay for the gastric bypass surgery. So my friend saw this commercial for this, and she says, "Oh, you'll get picked. Your family's like, you'll get picked. Y'all are very like lively, and I think y'all get picked for this. And there's $50,000, and you can have this surgery, and blah blah blah." And I said, "Oh, hey, I'll do that. I'll do a character assassination for that." But I wasn't thinking I would come off looking bad. I thought we would come off looking like, "Oh, we're just an artsy family. We have a fun, lively group, and I think that we make interesting just to go on the show just for this money for this surgery." And so I was very happy that she put that. It was like $30,000 went to my surgery, and I really can't remember what I even like. I mean, I took in consideration what they need in their household or what they said they would need. So you have conversations that you know that, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the wife is going to do like what you say, because I did it twice. And then the second one, the man wanted to like take me and hit me over the head with a CD, because all I gave him was a Aretha Franklin CD so he could listen to so no, it's one of those things.
So, but you did tell me that the interesting thing is you have kept in touch with Jeannie Fisher.
I like her. She's really like pretty, and she's a sincere person. She's a tender heart. And they split up like, I think, 6 months after that, our show. There was, you know, there's a lot of things that go on behind the scenes, but. And he is a wonderful person too. Like I like both of them. I mean, and she's just sweet, and she's very open, and she's very artsy. We have we have a lot of things in common too. I hate that you only see that portion, but I very little. I mean, I got to know her outside of there more so than, you know, like on the show, because I didn't get to see her much. I was with Chris and the family more, and so I only have that one meeting with her. So. She's like a chameleon kind of person. She just goes with the flow of what's going on. And I am one of those that, like, if my feathers are ruffled, I'm very open and verbal, and I'll say what I feel. I'm very passionate when I say what I feel, and I'm over it. If we have a disagreement, I mean, it's okay. I mean, I'm over it afterwards, but necessarily whenever I speak, people might get offended. I mean, it's like no in-betweens to me. It's like either love me or probably don't like me at all.
One of the other things that you were telling me that I thought was really interesting was the reaction to the show and who you were surprised embraced you and who rejected you.
I know. I'm telling you, this has been a rude awakening of people, and never. It's one of those don't judge a book by its cover kind of thing, because the people that I would not have ever thought would embrace this and look at it and just like be okay. It was the Christianity, the Christians that were really the ones that were like browbeating me, because I was supposed to be ministering and going into someone's household. If they would only know that we didn't sit there and just talk about politics or religion the entire time. It came up because there was things on the agenda of what we were having to do for the week, and I was saying no to it. And so once I said no to it, it became a big issue in, like, I'm sure script writing or whatever, which that went with the flow of it. I don't think it was like you know, once I said I was not doing it, I was not going to do, I didn't want to do certain things in their household, and I didn't understand it, and I felt uncomfortable. It became about that. And so I was uncomfortable, but, you know, I don't know. Jeannie, the family was very nice, very open, very liberal. And I'm a little more traditional, but by no means was I as judgmental as it would have, like, the show would have said. And like, I was like some Bible thumping person that was not, we didn't have any good time there. And I actually enjoyed being there. And he was very, very hospitable to me in the house, and they were like very nice. We had really wonderful conversations too, but it was the explosive part. Well, that makes, I mean, of course that made
you. You also said that the gay community, you felt they were the most.
Yes. The gay community. I mean, like, I probably have like a little bit of a gay following. I don't know. I've learned that since then. And I have just, those have been the best conversations, and I have, you know, they get in contact with me, and I've made some good friends. And I mean, over the years, I've had several come and visit me from like different states. And I actually have a famous drag queen, Candace Kane, in New York that used to do me, like, do an act on me, and I was in New York, and someone saw me, and they said, you have to come to the Candace Kane show. And I'm like, I don't know who Candace, I mean, I don't know anything about it. Oh, you please come. It's a drag queen that does you. And I went, and she actually came to the table, and she says, listen, I don't mean to offend you, because she had this persona of the show put on it, and I'm really not like that. I mean, I have my thoughts and what I believe in, but I don't push my beliefs on anyone. And I guess the number one question that I get most are from the gay community about Christian, you know, what about God issues, of what I think, just on my personal level, of what I think happens and what does God feel toward a gay person. And I mean, I get that question all the time, and it's like, I don't line up with what I say per se is what, like, certain churches would be, because I just like speak from my heart, and I think God loves everybody, and that's between God and that person. So
that's great. I love hearing that. And then we were so sad to hear that your daughter, who appeared on the show, had passed away. And then I saw a picture recently of her daughter, your granddaughter, and she's so beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
She is so beautiful. Tell us about your dance studio.
Oh, well, a girl out of the blue. I'm getting teary-eyed because it is the, you know, January 13th was Ashley's birthday. So it's like, I feel like certain things when you bring her, like even today, I take it as like that's a hello from heaven. Like, it makes me think of her. Everybody got to at least see in my living room and in our family dynamics. We were very, I mean, believe me, I miss the fights with her as much as I miss like just the wonderful good times, because it was just all part of like our relationship. We were, you know, mother, daughter, best friends, and co-workers together. So 10 years ago, Ashley was going to teach dancing, and she was going to teach, and on a beautiful day she hit a guardrail and was killed instantly, like a mile away from my house. I don't know how I didn't die the moment I heard it. And let's fast forward to last year, a girl called out of the clear blue that had a studio, said she's closing down, and that God was telling her and that she needed to call us and take it over. And I'm like, oh my goodness, there is absolutely no way. I'm not the dancer. You know, Brooke was an NFL cheerleader, and that's my youngest daughter. And her daughter, it was in high school, so her junior year. So anyway, we decided to do it. I didn't have much time, and we opened this studio hour away from my home, took it over, and I think we have like probably 160 students this year. Mm-hmm. It's going into the second year. We made the recital in memory of Ashley called Paper Hearts, because she used to put paper hearts in her kids' dance shoes before they went on stage to tell them that they had a little piece of her in there. Didn't mm-hmm. there was be scared of. So we called it Paper Hearts. And Abigail, who is her daughter, turned 18. She's a senior in high school. She teaches two of our baby classes, and she is absolutely beautiful. She really is. But she's an amazing dancer, teacher. She has Ashley's little spitfireness, but she's got her own little identity too. We work 3 days a week together. And she comes in, and it is, it's just been a real blessing. It truly has. They've put me in I'm in this little small town, and there's some students here that might can't take, pay for dancing. So it's like for every student that I let come from free scholarship, I am telling you, the phones will ring and I'll get five students that are paying students that are just like, so I just feel like I've been truly blessed with this. This has been my calling and where I'm supposed to be. And I'm me now. I'm not going to, you know, they want me to come and critique, and I'll say, oh, please, if I'm going to critique this dance, you know how I am so by the book, and I my eye goes to every little flaw of every little thing. So I'm very intense, and I'm not saying my dance studio is for everyone. I'm not an Abby Lee by no means, but I'm probably somewhere in between there, because I'm brutally honest. I mean, I've even said to someone, I don't think your child wants to take dance, and she might need to take violin lessons. And I mean, I think the mom got offended, but I mean, I'm not just going to sit here and take people's money just to come to dance, just to be doing it. And sometimes my mouth overloads my behind. You know how that goes.
I know I've said this before to you. I think that you, I hope that someone is listening to this and makes you the next Dance Moms person. I think you should take over for Abby Lee. I think you would be awesome.
Well, I'm going to tell you. I have had, thank you. I take that as a huge compliment. I would like to say that all that on Dance Moms is like all pretend, but girl, there's drama behind the scenes, that's for sure. Yeah, everybody thinks their little Susie is the best of everything. And, I guess the difference between us would be that I love the raw dancer. I'm not about just the diva dancer that it comes natural to. I love, love, love seeing someone that has more heart in dance than the raw talent, and to see that like progress. I just feel so rewarded when I see that. And I have 7 different teachers, including Abigail, and you know, my Brooke comes in for specialty numbers. And we have some of these little towns, these little country hick towns have some amazing talent. It's like really, really crazy. So, oh yes, I would be up for the challenge of that. That would be something.
You had mentioned that there are kids that don't have the opportunity, the financial means to take court or classes. Is there some sort of way that people could support your studio?
I guess they could, Kate. I haven't ever went, I've done a few things where I've like some local people have done a few things to like help me, because it's like there's certainly a need for, you know, and I mean, I don't just do it unless I feel like there's a need. And I just can't stand, there was a little girl that was like walking past the studio and she would look in the window at them dancing. And it's like, I saw her one day when I pulled up and I said, hey, what's your name? And she told me, and I said, do you like to dance? She goes, I would, but I can't because my mother, I'm living with my grandparents and they can't afford it. I mean, like she wasn't saying anything. Kind of, she didn't even know who I was. I definitely don't look like the studio owner. And, when she said that, I was like, oh goodness, that's where it started. And back in the day, whenever we had the studio with Ashley, it was the same way. And so I just cannot stand to see that money, like for the talent. And this child, anyway, she's coming and she is like one of our star dancers, and nobody knows the situation or any of that. I mean, that's neither here nor there. So I don't know. I haven't never, ever, I mean, there's been a couple local people that might pay for costumes. You know, if I can do the free dance, and they'll pay for a costume or a couple costumes, or like, I don't have anybody that's really in competition that to that level of dance for, as you know, that's a needy person that haven't been that serious about it. But I don't know.
Tell everybody where they can find the studio. Maybe you'd be surprised how people would reach out and want to help.
Well, our studio is in Franklinton, Louisiana. And our telephone number is 985, I don't even know the real, 322-2141. I never call the number. Can you tell?
And the name of it is Breaking Point?
It's called Breaking Point, P-O-I-N-T-E, like the point shoe. And we came up with that name because it's Brooke's, my youngest daughter's initials, Brooke Perrin. And also I had reached my breaking point when we decided to do this with the loss of Ashley. So I was like, why not?
But, so, and you have a Facebook page for the studio?
I do. And we have
an Instagram.
Yeah, we have an Instagram, but we have a website about to go up. We should have probably done it at the beginning of the year. But anyways, we did that.
And what is the Instagram? Do you remember the Instagram for the dance studio?
I don't, but it's got to be just under Breaking Point.
I'm going to find it so everybody can find it.
Yeah. So I'm just very dedicated to this, and you know, they do a lot of, they like to trick me. They're like, let's go live. I'm like, oh girl, y'all don't want to go live with me. They forget about the show. They'll every once in a while it'll come up, and I was like, I don't necessarily want to do this. You'll start getting up, but you know what? We went live with a lot of different things with the dance studio, and it's been a positive thing. It has been.
Well, I know that everybody is going to. I know that everybody is so excited to hear from you. I had so many notes. So excited to hear what you're doing, and the love for you is so big.
Well, thank you. I've been a little incognito since Ashley's death, and people have wondered, and I still get when they find out about it. they'll say, well, what's going on? What, you know? And I'm like, I don't know. And you know, the morning of, like, once death happens within your family, and it's a closeness, like a mother daughter, it's you can't skip like that mourning process. So you no matter how happy, and I kept saying, I'm not going to let this steal my joy and with Abigail and Brooke, and I don't want them to live through me mourning and being, but it just happened. I'm telling you, 10 years of like happened in a blinking of an eye. And there's, you know, some days that are just absolutely wonderful. And then there's days that just like the least little thing, you know, will like make me just very sad. But I know that, you know, I'll see her again, and I think she would be very happy with what we're doing. We have a New York trip planned. I'm taking some dancers to New York for their first time to go dance at Broadway Dance Center. And actually, when I was in California, I got to go to the Edge, which was one of the things on my bucket list to go and see. And I had a wonderful time. And some of the So You Think You Can Dance contestants had like taught me a dance. Would you believe that? I can still do a split, Kate.
That's awesome.
So anyways, don't ever miss a chance to dance. That's what I say.
That's great. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it, and I'm wishing you the best, and I would love to help with Breaking Point.
Oh, thank you, Kate. I hope I didn't ramble too much.
Not at all.
If you're ever in Louisiana, I can like fix you up with like some wonderful strawberry beignets and a dance class.
That sounds awesome to me. I'm in.
Okay, Kate.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes that you like, so you can find the home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours, and even on the same day, with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today.
So on the line, I've got Eric Goldie. Eric is a New York-based writer, producer, and digital media expert, and you may recognize him. He appeared on a few episodes of Real Housewives of New York because he was Carol Radswell's assistant for a little while. So please welcome Eric.
Hi, this is so much fun.
I feel like you have a great name, Eric Goldie.
I know, I mean, I always say like my name is so boring, but I think it's just the last name that makes it work, because Eric is like the most boring name on the planet, but Goldie is what I think.
Yeah, no, it's a great name. It's a good name. I asked you to watch a show on Bravo that I had never seen either, called Timber Creek Lodge.
Right.
So let's first talk about that, and then I want to get into Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. So Timber Creek Lodge is a TV show on Bravo, and it's basically a group of staff members serving what they call elite clientele at an ultra-luxurious ski lodge located near the village of Whistler, British Columbia, Canada. So this was my first episode I'd ever seen of the show. You had never seen the show either, correct?
I've never seen the show. I've seen commercials for it, but that's as much as I knew about the show.
So when I watch that show, I just think, what a god-awful vacation. Did you, watching the show, think, well, that's someplace I'd add to my bucket list?
Well, I just didn't. First of all, it was weird watching because they were skiing, which seemed a lot of fun, but it was like 75 degrees out, so they were really skiing down slush. So I don't know if I wanted to go on like a ski trip, if that's the place that I would pick necessarily. That house seems really fun with that staff, so that would be a good time. I don't really get like the dynamic between, like, is the staff allowed to have sex with the people that they're serving?
Well, I guess not. So they have a staff quarters, and then the guests stay in the larger cabin. The gentleman who owns this resort, something Gibbons, I forget his first name, he's apparently a big deal there. And he had said he's okay with them fraternizing, but I think that there's a level to which you should not take it. I mean, that's just like professionally speaking, but apparently that like all goes out the door at this place.
Because I was kind of comparing it to Below Deck, where, you know, you were supposed to treat the, and I mean, let me tell you, I would go on a below deck trip 10,000 times before I went on this ski trip, because one has no comparison over the other. But on that show, you're not even allowed to so much as give the guest a dirty look. And on this show, it's like you can go out and have fun and hang out with the guest. I just didn't understand, like, are they friends with the guests? And then in the end, like the whole tip situation, it was very confusing. It's interesting, but not something I'm used to seeing.
Also, I feel like in Below Deck, they got way better tips. At the end of that, I felt like it was like, oh, yeah, $125 here. You don't get any money because I had sex with the guy that you've been sleeping with.
Yeah, what was it? That he already got the tip or something? Or he already gave the tip?
I mean, also the clientele, it seemed to me that they were like, I call a level below white trash trash. They seem trashy to me.
Yeah, they seemed a little, because I didn't know, were they on the episode before the one that I watched? They seem like they are. There, something happened in the episode before. Or are the guests on the entire season?
No, I think it's a different set of people each episode, but they felt like they got so much out of this episode because they had this group of, like, girls willing to have sex with the one semi-attractive
staff. What was her name? I took notes because I couldn't tell the difference between the three blonde girls.
Well, her name was Sean, which is always Sean, sort of a red flag.
Right. When you're sleeping with a girl named Sean. Yeah.
And his name was Mark, and he thought he was way more attractive than he probably is. There also, it was sort of run by a man who looked like Truman Capote. He was like this very sweaty Truman Capote looking mensch who,
was like the boss of the house. Is that what it is?
Yeah, I think he started off as an assistant and then he worked his way up to running the staff. Okay. But I feel like the staff was sort of like low rent too.
Yeah, I don't really understand like what each person, like there's one girl who is a maid, like she is, or like a cleaning person, that's all she does.
Yeah, they called her head of housekeeping.
Yeah, that's like a fancy title for a maid.
Now, if your 26-year-old friend caught up with you and you asked them, like, what are you doing? And they said, I'm working at a resort and I'm head of housekeeping, which basically means I'm cleaning toilets for people who wear cowboy hats and have hair extensions and sleep with the staff. Would you ask them if maybe they had taken a right, like a wrong corner in their life?
I would. And I would tell them I'm praying for them. I mean, that's just like, great. I mean, I don't know how much that, I mean, we've seen how much that job pays. It's about $200 for, what, a week's worth of work? So
they got basically three marbles, and then at the end of it, their celebration dinner was held outside, and they...
I saw that.
And they all got to throw axes at a piece of wood. That's not my idea of a good time.
No, that's my idea of, like, as a, like a punishment. Like, I would never want to do that.
So all in all, I thought this show was a big fat snore. What do you think?
Yeah, I did not like it. I mean, Bravo shows, I can always, like, I can not watch an entire season of, like, Vanderpump Rules or anything and then get right into it and be real interested. This, I never have to see again.
That's true. So, before we go to Beverly Hills, just a couple questions for your short time that you were, you know, sort of a supporting character, if you will. Mm-hmm. Number one, does Carol eat? You have been witness. Does she eat?
She eats nonstop. This woman can put it down. She eats – now she's eating really healthy because she is dating Adam, and he cooks, you know, all these vegan food, and he's an amazing chef. So she's been eating – like when I first met her, she was eating like ramen noodles and like basically kid food. And now she's eating all like vegan. We go out to dinner and she orders like really healthy, like she'll eat chicken, I think, still, but she's really, really healthy.
It's like raw food and stuff like that.
Yeah, she eats nonstop. I've seen her put down an entire pizza. And if you've seen a New York pizza, they're huge. So I thought one time that we were gonna be splitting a pizza. We brought it back to the apartment. I got one piece and she got seven, I think.
I appreciate a woman like that. I really do. I love that. I would much rather roll with a woman that does that than is like, you know what, I'm off the carbs. Yeah.
She does not. I mean, genetics. It's all genetics, and she got lucky.
So does she still store sweaters in her oven?
So she recently redid her kitchen, and – or not recently. A while ago she redid her kitchen. To my knowledge, she does not store sweaters in there anymore. Adam, I don't even know if she has an oven, I think. I don't know what she keeps in there though. But it's interesting. Adam used to cook in her kitchen all the time, and that's the most action I've seen her kitchen get in 6 years of knowing her.
Oh, 6 years. Wow. Okay. So when Bethany would come to her apartment, did you A, drink margaritas with them on her leopard couch, B, take notes on the unsafe stairwell, or 3, hide in the kitchen?
Hide in the kitchen. Without a doubt, I hid in the kitchen. And that stair rail is so chic, but it's so terrifying.
Looks terrifying.
Yeah.
So on the show, would you say that she's like a legit friend with just one?
I think that, you know, just from watching the show, you know, I did like a few scenes like years ago, but I think now just from being, you know, watching from the side and knowing Carol and, you know, hearing how she talks about it off camera. Yeah, I mean, I know that she has a really great friendship with Bethany on and off camera. I know that her and Ramona are really close, and she's really good at, you know, keeping in touch with people who are off the show. I know Heather is one of her really good friends. Still, they keep in contact, and she's a very loyal person. So she's a good one to be friends with.
So if you've been on the show, do you still watch the show, or is it just, do you feel like it's too weird?
I don't really watch it at all. I mean, I feel like when I was on the show, like I would always get like a screener beforehand. I would be able to watch the episode before it aired. And I would like skim through and just see if there was anything stupid that I did, yeah. Which there always was. But no, I mean, now I don't really watch it. I used to work in entertainment and would like if I was interviewing the one of the housewives, I would watch the episode. But I definitely am not a religious housewives watcher. So, it's a great show. I can totally see how people become addicted to it, and you know, they kind of live vicariously through these women.
So you have like no interest in what actually happened at the St. Regis with Luann and the man she married.
Oh God, don't even get me started.
No, I can get you started. I want you to get started. Are you kidding? Yeah, I mean, that's, you must, if you work for someone and then you become friends with them, I would assume that you get quite loyal to them.
Yeah, I mean, Carol is like, she introduces, you know, me as her son in like the weirdest situations. Like one time we were shopping for bathing suits and she was trying on all of these like little tiny bathing suits. I mean, she's got a killer body, so she, you know, is asking me how they look, and then 2 minutes later she goes up to the woman, you know, working in the store and says, "Oh, this is my son," which is like so someone who doesn't know that she's kidding, but that's Carol.
You must tell her that What Remains is one of my very favorite books.
Oh my God. Isn't that it's an amazing book, right?
I mean, so well written.
It's like poetic, right?
It is. She's very talented, which is like, was baffling to me in that storyline where Aviva accused her of using a ghostwriter. It was like so stupid.
It's insane. And you know what? There's a reason that woman's not on the show anymore.
I know. Yeah. All right. So you watch Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
I watched a few episodes this season. So I know that there are a few new women in the mix, and yeah.
So tell me what you think about Dorit.
I'm just so confused. Okay. First of all, she could say anything and I'm intrigued because of whatever that accent is. I don't know. I mean, she's born in Connecticut, right?
Connecticut. Mm-hmm. And lived in New York.
And she's got this weird, it's not even British. It's like, I don't know what you call it. It's like, remember when Lindsay Lohan had that video that just came out?
Yes.
Like, it was a Lindsay Lohan. Like, she was speaking Lindsay Lohan. This, like,
that's a good way to put it. She was speaking like a Lohan Madonna cross, like hybrid accent.
Exactly. But I love it. I think it's so interesting to listen to. And I like knowing this woman is from Connecticut and it's great. She's lived all over the world and now she lives in Beverly Hills and she's got this crazy accent. The funny thing is, though, it sounds fancy. Like, her accent sounds great. So she can get away with it. I think she knows exactly what she's doing. Some of these women, when they go on these shows, they either A, say they want to be, you know, the voice of reason, the down to earth one, the one that all the viewers can relate to, or they're going to go in there and they're going to, you know, start causing, you know, little drama. And I think that's kind of what she did in the beginning with Pantygate. You know, it was harmless drama. Mm-hmm. Whereas, who's the other one? Sassoon or whatever?
Eden.
Eden Sassoon. You can tell that woman is on that show only for the drama. She is constantly picking at Kyle and Kim about the sobriety issue, and it's just, you could tell, like, that's her thing. She keeps, she wants to dig in on that.
Do you think that living so close, in such, you know, being so close to the Housewives of New York show, you can sort of see the same patterns or the way people try to, like, steer a story their own way? Do you see that when you watch other shows?
Yeah, I mean, if there's nothing, you know, really, it's like Aviva Drescher. Like, there was nothing interesting going on in that woman's life. So she had to create a storyline. And she said, oh, well, it's all for TV. It's all for TV. But at the end of the day, you're on a reality show, and viewers don't realize that this is not all real. I mean, most of the smart ones realize that, you know, some of it, you know, it's a TV show. You're putting on a production. It's not fake at all. So when you go on there and you accuse people of things that aren't true and you try to start this drama, like, these viewers really believe it. Even if, like, someone like what's her name, Aviva, is causing this just for the show, like, that becomes reality in the end. So I think that by Eden going on and telling Kim, like, I'm worried about you and you don't seem well and blah, 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 like, that becomes reality. And that's, I don't think that's right.
Yeah. Well, also, you're damaging someone's brand. I mean, Carol is a writer, so, you know.
Yeah, no, but that's the thing. With that, it was so unrealistic that people didn't even think twice about it.
Yeah.
At least if they're intelligent, they wouldn't. But with something like Kim's sobriety, like, that's something that was recently in the news, and people know that this is something that she struggled with. So to come back on and to say these things about her, and, you know, even Lisa Rinna saying that she's so close to death or something. I mean, that's, like, such an accusation. You can't say that.
Right.
It's crazy.
What do you think about Dorit's husband?
I think he is so excited to be on the show.
I think so too.
I think he's thrilled. And I think, can I just say for the record, I think Erica is the coolest, most badass woman of all time. Like, she is hands down so, can I swear? I mean,
of course, yes. She's
fucking incredible. I love her.
She's and so confident.
Oh my God. And why wouldn't she be? Look at her. I mean, she's a friggin' bombshell. I absolutely love her. This is her second season, right?
Yes.
I think she's going to be on here. If the show lasts, if it keeps going, she's going to keep going with it, because she is making that show.
How about the way that Dorit makes passive-aggressive comments about her career versus Board George's?
Well, I just think that they're too, like, it's for, oh, but then how about Boy George goes up to Erica and said that he was a fan? So, I mean, it's funny because, you know, one career has nothing to do. Boy George is a totally separate situation. I mean, she's an entertainer, and this is not like, I mean, this is like her passion. And I don't think that especially in an era now where, you know, women should be building up other women and, you know, promoting this whole, you know, women's equality and, you know, especially with what's going on in the world right now, there should be no, you know, belittling of someone's career or someone's aspirations. I just think that's petty. And if anything, it makes Erica look even better that she's taking the high road and she's like, fuck it, I'm going to keep going. And
she does have some great one-liners, doesn't she?
Erica's one-liners are, I mean, she could write a book. It's amazing.
So I interviewed Cedric, who used to live with Lisa Vanderpump in like season one. And he told me that Lisa used to work on one-liners, like she used to practice them, mm-hmm. which I don't know, maybe that's possible. I get the feeling like Erica just is that clever. She doesn't even have to think about it.
Right. Exactly. I mean, at the end of the day, she's a performer and she writes her own, you know, music. So she has that thought process. She creates these, you know, have you seen her videos? I mean, they're amazing. And she's able to do that. So she's a creative person and she can probably come up with these things, you know, on the spot. And if she's smart, as this show is going on, as they're filming, she's writing down these situations so that when she goes into these interviews, she can just spit these one-liners out and it just comes out, you know, natural.
Do you, now that you look back, what you were saying before about like steering storylines, when Luann flipped out and was so appalled by Carol's relationship with Adam, is that something where that's a real reaction to a life situation, or I need to make, you know, I might not be a full-time cast member, so I'm going to make this more than it is so I have a storyline, I get more camera time?
I personally think that it was, I can't speak on their behalf, but just from watching it as, you know, from the sidelines, I can see that I saw how happy Carol and Adam were. So the fact that Luann was trying to discredit their relationship in any way, it was just, it was crazy.
Yeah, I guess that would be hard. I mean, I could imagine that'd be hard to get over. So tell everybody what you're doing now so everybody can follow you.
So now, well, I don't know. I have a real job 5 days a week, but that's, we don't have to talk about that.
No, tell us what you're doing.
Oh, I work in marketing for a marketing agency. It's fun. It's amazing. We work with really great clients. But in my off time, I'm traveling, and I've been doing a bunch of social media on my own, you know, profiles and building up my own pages. And yeah, I mean, I was just at the Super Bowl last weekend. That was a blast.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was so much fun.
Where can people find you on social media?
People can find me all across social media. I'm at Eric Goldie, E-R-I-C-G-O-L-D-I-E. Like Goldie.
Well, I want to thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you. This was so much fun.
Yeah, it's so easy, right?
I'm hooked on podcasts now.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
I've got Christina Gibson on the line from Summer House.
Hi.
So into this show, so I'm delighted to get a chance to ask you a million questions.
Oh my gosh, well, I'm so glad that you love it. You know, we filmed it last summer and now everyone's finally getting to see it. So we're excited to hear the reaction and feedback, and glad to be here and chatting with you.
So for the entire last year, have you been just worried or excited for the show to air?
I think on my side, I was definitely curious to see how everything was going to look. We don't see the episodes in advance except for a couple days before they air, so we're all somewhat in the dark. But I was excited, too, because, you know, we put a lot of time and effort and energy and ourselves out there. So it's nice to finally have it, you know, being watched and hearing what people think about it.
Now, when the show airs and you get to see it beforehand, do you sometimes want to drive to someone's house and stab them?
It is a little funny to watch the final versions, because that's when you see what everybody says behind your back. You know, obviously you live one version of it and you see what happens in front of your face or people you're interacting with. But when you see what happens behind your back, sometimes it does irritate you a little bit. But I'm not a violent person, so I don't know about some people, but I don't personally want to.
I mean, I would. I would definitely hit somebody. So how did you find out about the show?
A friend of ours was talking to the producers, and she invited all of our girlfriends to come in. So me, the twins, Lindsay, there was about a group of 10 of us who went in, and we started talking to the producers, and, you know, things got further along and they decided to keep talking to a few of us. And Kyle was a friend of mine who had been in a house with me years back, and he was talking to them. So it all just started coming together, and we were kind of like, all right, let's do this. I mean, we do this anyway. Why not do it and be on Bravo?
Was it the twins that sort of spearheaded it?
Actually, our friend who brought us in for to meet with them actually didn't get chosen, unfortunately.
Oh my God, so, that blows. Oh my God, she must be so pissed.
I know. I think she was probably a little bit disappointed, which is completely understandable, but she has a lot going on. She has like a great Instagram brand that she's blowing up and doing great at. So I think that she has a lot of good things going on herself, and everything happens for a reason, you know?
All right. So what, do you still live with Lindsay?
Lindsay and I do not live together anymore. And, while you watch the show, you will see why and, how it all happens.
So, is she still with that guy Everett?
They are still together. Yes.
Are you glad that you don't live with her anymore?
I am. I'm definitely glad. I think it was much needed and just way more relaxing and way less stressful. I mean, it was a lot, you know, living together. We lived together for 2 years or so before doing this. And
I feel like we're not getting the whole picture. I feel like there's something missing and that I need you to put the puzzle pieces together. I get the idea from her that she has like some mom issues and therefore needs attention, which is understandable because there's like an abandonment issue. And it looks like you get annoyed with her because she's incredibly selfish, which we've all had roommates who are unbelievably selfish and drive us batty. So she's a little bit clueless about how selfish she is because she's so wrapped around her abandonment issues. So for you, the fact that like she wanted to have a day where these 10 interns, by the way, why does she have 10 interns? Like, who has,
I mean, anybody
interns?
Can have unpaid interns. That doesn't really make you legitimate.
That's absurd. I think what you're trying to say, at least what I took, you know, with my degree in armchair psychology is that, listen, I have to bend over backwards for your selfishness all the time. It's not that big of a deal to take one day and ask your interns who could be, or, you know, may or may not be murderers who might either kill me or rob me. Like, can they maybe stay in their own apartment considering we live in New York City and we live in a shoebox? Am I wrong on that?
Here's the deal. Like, we had a 3-bedroom apartment with 1 bathroom. And, you know, I was working from home this summer. Our other roommate is in real estate, so she was home sometimes. And, you know, they only have 1 bathroom. I don't want 6 people. And when I need to get in the shower, I can't use the bathroom. And I just, you know, sometimes you need peace and quiet when you're working from home. And I just didn't want to hear, you know, her holding meetings and whatever. And it's just, you know, I'm not an unreasonable person. Had she approached it differently and asked me and said, hey, I'm in a really difficult situation, would it be okay for a day if this happened? I would have considered it, but I didn't like the way she went about it. She basically told me that they were coming over the night before. She first started off by saying 2 weeks and then changed it to a day. But I'm a reasonable person. And if you ask me for a favor, I'm usually happy to do it. But I was tired of being walked on by her. And I felt like it was a very one-way friendship where I was always listening to her and being there for her and letting her.
I feel like I got it. The moment where you asked her to get the suntan lotion, she didn't bring it down and then wouldn't get up and get it. I felt like I get it. In that moment, I got it. I got who she was and the dynamics of your relationship.
And I mean, that just gets exhausting to be in a one-sided friendship all the time and have somebody who just kind of walks all over you all the time. So it's not the interns that were the issue. It's that I felt like she wasn't being respectful and she wasn't being considerate. And I was just sick of it. And, you know, up until that night at the party when we have that fight, I don't think anything was, you know, majorly ruined in our relationship. Like everything that you saw was, you know, silly, petty bickering. And I did try to address it with her earlier in the summer when we were shopping. And I told her that I felt like she was selfish and she never asked me anything about my life. And she just completely dismissed me and said, I'm jealous, which, you know, it's frustrating.
I mean, that's pretty typical of somebody who's like full of themselves to answer that way. I do think that that's a good marker for how what a nice person is how much they ask you about yourself. Okay, so why doesn't the one twin live with her husband? Why isn't he there? It's kind of weird.
So Brad and Ashley were both living in New York for years. They've been friends of ours for years. And Brad got a new job in California he was going to move back for. And they were living together up until, I want to say, the spring. And we started filming in the summer. So we all decided we were doing a show around maybe January, February, we found out it was definitely a go. So he was already moving back for work, and Ashley, you know, wanted to be a part of this and spend her last summer with her sister. So she was like, I'm going to stay here for the summer. I'm going to move back in the fall. And you'll see, you know, she does go home and miss some weekends, and she's living with Brad now. They have a great house together they just bought. So they're a very solid couple, and they did long distance for years prior. He was a baseball player, so he was away a lot for that. So they're used to it. So okay. It seems a little weird.
Especially because, you know, it's a summer spent living in a house with people who are basically just having sex all the time. Not to say that she would cheat. It's just like, it's a weird place for, you are all single people, and then you've got this married lady, and she's constantly like, you know what? It's basically like me moving in with you guys.
Well, here's the question, Kate.
You'd be like, Kate, get out of here.
Would you leave your husband and family and come do it or not?
No, because it would be me living with single people. And I just think that they'd be like, get out of here. Like, you're annoying. Because I feel like she's always like, well, you guys, coming from a married person. I just think single people get annoyed with that.
I mean, I don't really get annoyed with it because I feel like she's not somebody who's like condescending about her relationship. I do feel like Lindsay would try to like throw her relationship with Everett at me, like that she's better than me because of that. And I don't feel like Ashley's like that. So it didn't bother me. And Ashley's a lot of fun too. I mean, obviously you don't see everything, and I'm sure they kind of, you know, focus on the married twin angle a lot, but she's a lot of fun. And I was really glad to have her in the house.
Why do they all drink rosé? Why do these men drink rosé? I think that's strange.
I think that rosé is just like a good summer drink. It's light, it's refreshing. Like, we call it summer water.
But for a woman, I mean, it's like, do they also need a box of tampons? It's strange.
It's rosé. Guys can drink rosé too. It's 2017.
If a man was wearing Madras pants and was drinking a bottle of rosé, I would not think that he would be interested in my vagina. That's all I'm saying.
I hear you. I feel like in the Hamptons in the summer, it's pretty commonplace for dudes to drink rosé, but I get it, like on the West Coast. Well, actually, I feel like I know guys on the West Coast too who drink it, so maybe I just need to find some manlier men to hang out with. But I think it's just, you know, we always had it at the house. The girls love it. The guys love it. And it kind of became our thing. But, back to the job thing. I just wanted to throw this in. So, yeah, I mean, houses are expensive, but if you split them up between nine people, it can be affordable. And as a freelancer, if you're working in the Hamptons, you can actually write off your summer rental on your taxes.
Well, I get totally.
Yeah, like, not that I was balling large this summer at all, but I mean, if you're working out there, it's a tax write-off, so there's ways to make it work.
Also, does Kyle really, you know, people on television use the term entrepreneur pretty loosely. Like, does Kyle really sell exercise shorts that you can wear without the imprisonment of your testicles? Like, is that a legit business?
So, yeah, Bird Dogs is definitely a legit business. Our friend is a founder, and I think Kyle is, like, either the head of marketing or something. But Kyle has actually sold a couple startups before. So I think that's where his, you know, income comes from, because he sold a couple startups. But he also has a new app, I think, called Phoenix. It's like a weight loss supplement product line type of thing. It's brand new, so that's why I don't know all the ins and outs of it. But he's got his hand in a lot of different things, and I think having sold a couple successful startups, like, that puts some money in the bank and kind of lets you be able to mix it up and dip into different projects.
Okay. I do have to say, the moments where he stuffs his face with food in the middle of the night, he definitely, I felt like he was my spirit animal. I did.
Oh my God, he is
relate
so
to that.
Funny. Like, he is just one of the funniest people that I know. And even when he's drunk and acting like a complete idiot, like, I just think he's hilarious. Like, he doesn't take himself too seriously. And he's always down to have fun. He can always make you smile. He's a really good friend. So, and I like that he can laugh at himself. Like, the first episode with Stassi in the hot tub, you know, he's laughing at it. He owned it. So he's just, a great person to be around and a great person to have in your house, even if his chips are on the floor every morning.
Now, did you guys have a cleaning person to help mop up the spilled mojitos or like the biological fluids all over Kyle's room floor? Did you have somebody that would clean that up, or did you guys have to clean
up? I sure as hell was not cleaning Kyle's room, but I think you'll see me and the workers do a lot of the house cleaning in the kitchen. Like, we're wiping the counters and mopping floors, but we did have a cleaning person come once a week when we weren't there and just do a deep clean because, you know, after the weekend, sometimes it's a little rough.
Do you think that the family that actually lives in that home had to hose it down after you guys left?
I mean, it's probably not a bad idea to get that hot tub cleaned out because it looks like a lot of shenanigans went down there. So I'd recommend them draining that for sure. But I think overall we were pretty respectful. I mean,
I interviewed this reality TV lawyer and he told me that on many of the houses that reality shows that they rent, that they have to repaint, refloor, like that a lot of the houses get trashed.
No, I don't think ours got trashed. I think we are all like very neat type A people and we don't like when the house is dirty. We don't like it looking like a pigsty and, you know, stuff being left out. I mean, you saw Lauren freak out about bananas in the freezer. So we kept it pretty clean.
Okay, is Carl still single?
You know what? That is a good question. I honestly do not know the answer to that. I will say that this is not the last you'll see of Lauren and Carl's summer romance. So there's more of that coming.
Is she still single?
I am not sure about that either, to be honest.
You need to get in the know. What's going on?
Well, I kind of tried to not get involved, but I told Lauren something about Carl this summer and she accused me of interfering. So I just kind of backed off of that situation and I don't really ask too many questions. I mean, I know they're friends and hang out, but as far as any status, like I really can't speak to that. They would have to answer that one.
But if you're living in a house with a bunch of single people, like this was my nightmare always when I was single, was that I would have to overhear someone else having sex in another room. How many times did that happen to you?
I definitely heard that. Let's just say my room was next to Kyle's. We shared a bathroom. So I heard some noise.
You had to share a bathroom too.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That must have been something. I feel bad for the girls that came through, but I do get why you'd want to like hook up with Carl because I think he's funny.
Yeah, he's a lot of fun.
So out of the house, who do you still enjoy and who would you have no problem never speaking to again?
I would have no problem never speaking to Lindsay again. And we really don't unless it's on Twitter. So
unless it's on Twitter.
I mean, did you see, if you look at her Twitter page and mine, she was like going after me during the episode that night. So
lame.
For me, I thought like still, even at this point, watching yourself back, you don't have any sense of remorse or any, you know, nope, nothing. Keeps going. And she only stopped when everybody on Twitter was like, stop, like you're making yourself look bad. Like,
yeah, I was just going to
say she was fired.
And that's surprising from, I mean, I have a background in PR too. I think that that's really strange considering she works in PR that she would do that.
I think
it's
a little crazy that she's a publicist and acted the way she did this summer on TV. Like if you can't present yourself in a good manner, then I don't know why a brand would think that you could represent them well.
So what happened to this company? Does she still have 10 interns working out of an apartment?
I believe she works at a WeWork right now. I'm not sure how many people work there. I think she has one girl who's an assistant and probably has some interns still in the mix, but luckily I don't have to know the details anymore.
So you're in New York now. Are you going to stay in New York?
We'll see. I mean, we want to see what happens, whether, you know, we're doing a second season. Obviously, if we were, I would still be here. I took a new job in September that's here in New York. So doing that here for a while. But never say never. You know, I used to live in California and in L.A. So maybe one day I'll end up back in California. Maybe I'll end up in another country. Who knows?
That's great. All right. Well, tell everybody how they can find you.
So you can find me on Instagram at Christina, C-R-I-S-T-I-N-A, Blair Gibson, and on Twitter at Christina Gibson. It's Christina without an H. And anything else these days? I don't know. Facebook. Oh, I have like a Facebook page, facebook.com/Christina Blair Gibson without an H. Oh, one other thing that I just want to add and clear up is I know that some people, old Lindsay, as well as some people on social media, have said that I'm jealous of her and her relationship. I was actually involved with somebody throughout all of the summer who really couldn't film due to his job. And if you watch our 4th of July episode, you can see him in the background with me for the most part, but like he couldn't really film and get mic'd up and like be in dialogue or anything. So I was not jealous. I did have someone in my life. Not jealous of any relationships in the house. So
are you still with that? Are you still with that person or are single now?
We are not together right now.
You're single.
Recently single.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
Right. Yeah.
Is it hard to date in New York City?
I don't think it's hard to date in New York City. There's a lot of young single people here. I think it is hard to find somebody who wants to be in a serious relationship because I think Lauren said it one night. It's like Disneyland, take a new ride every night, you know?
Yeah, well, that's, I think people would say that about Los Angeles too.
Yeah, I think any major city, you get that distraction, but I think particularly New York because, you know, there's no cars, you walk everywhere, everyone's drinking all the time, like everyone's always out and about, and it's easy to get distracted, and I think for women as well. But I think there's some good guys out there.
You'll find somebody, I'm sure.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much for the interview. I appreciate it.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
So on the line, I've got Josie, who is a glorious hairdresser and blow dries my hair on occasion. And as you can imagine, that is a job in itself since my hair is like horsehair.
It's not that bad.
It's pretty bad. Don't lie. So, okay. So you told me that I needed to watch shows about gypsies.
Yes.
So
I'm surprised you haven't watched them already. It blows my mind.
Yeah, I never saw it. I think my friend Maura told me about them, but I think I forgot. So I watched the episode of the Big Great American Gypsy Wedding. So this is the
Fat American Gypsy Wedding.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the episode that I watched featured two people. The first was a girl in Elkton, Maryland, which is a shithole place to live. Her name, that is like, they had the worst mid-Atlantic accents. I mean, mine's pretty bad, but sometimes, like, this was bad. Her name was Julie. She lived in a trailer with her mom, Crystal. I'm sure it's no surprise that her mom's name was Crystal. Her grandmother's name was Tills. She was apparently some big deal Romanian matriarch. However, Tills now lives in the United States in a trailer with a no trespassing sign taped on the front door. She basically wears pajamas all day long. She may or may not be missing teeth. She has long hair, longer than Crystal Gale's hair, and she always has a cigarette hanging out the side of her mouth. So apparently, in the Romanian gypsy world, when you're 15 years old or turning 16, you get a coming of age party. It is important at that party to wear a glorious multicolored dress. Crystal sat down with Julie before the party and went over Julie's requests for dress, and she listed about 19 colors.
Oh, is this the rainbow dress with the bells, right?
Yes. So she took she took a dress out of a box, and it looked like a rainbow parachute with bedazzlement. And she explained, Crystal explained, that in the Romanian gypsy tradition, bells are sewn into the coming of age dress, and the gypsy is asked to walk a straight line, and if any of those bells on the dress ring, that means she's not pure. Tills, right. The grandmother with the cigarette hanging out of her mouth, dressed up for the occasion for the party. She put on a leopard print top and she wore a hat with her outfit. It was bedazzled. It said pretty girl swag. It was like something that you would get at a car wash. She probably did get it at a car wash. She still had the cigarette dangling out of her mouth. And Julie walked down the plank and everyone was delighted to hear no bells ringing, which meant that she hadn't had sex with anybody, which isn't a surprise because they live in a trailer. So if somebody came over, you probably would have heard her have sex with somebody. And I don't get the feeling that there are many attractive guys in Elkton, Maryland to hook up with.
Well, and they only associate with other gypsies. The funny thing is that, so I'm obsessed with this show, and I'm like a walking encyclopedia of this stupid show. So they, contrary to what their appearances are on the outside, they're actually pretty moral people. And they, even though they get married at 15, the girls don't hold hands with boys. They don't hang out with boys. They stay home and they cook and they clean and they learn how to be a housewife.
Well,
so
yeah, they were bragging about how Julie takes care of the family and cooks. She didn't cook. She made her brother a bologna sandwich with white bread, mayonnaise, and bologna. That's not cooking.
Oh my gosh. I know. It's crazy.
And why does everybody get delivered to these parties in carriages?
It's I don't know. It's just the gypsy thing. It's reminiscent of their traveler nature being in the caravans.
I see.
The more flash they have, that shows that they have more value. So they try to one-up each other by having the bigger dress, the blingier dress, the bigger carriage, the bigger party, because they're trying to one-up each other to show that they have more value. Because when they were in the old country, you know, gypsies didn't have anything. So the more bling they had it shows that they have more value in their new life.
Okay, so that part culminated with the party. A boy came in the vicinity of her dance space and the grandmother flipped out. Her Aunt Marie, who was wearing jeggings, ripped the grandmother out of the scene into a back way and said, "You will not destroy my niece's birthday party like you destroyed my childhood." The next day, they met at a diner. Again, the cigarette dangling out of the grandmother's mouth. She apologized for perhaps overstepping her bounds, and they made an agreement that Julie would not be a hooker. Then, there was another story within the episode. This featured a Greek gypsy in Missouri. I was not aware that there were Greek gypsies, let alone in Missouri. And she was married. Her name was Tatiana, 25, and she was marrying a 27-year-old named Zaki. And they only described him as a Kurdish traveler. I'm not sure what that means. Is that some sort of position? Traveler? I mean, does he make income as a traveler? It was a little bit confusing.
Travelers are like, they're gypsies, basically. It's just another name for the gypsies. So the Irish travelers are the bigger traveler community, and they're gypsies as well, but they just distinguish themselves as travelers rather than gypsies.
So he's basically a Kurdish gypsy too.
Correct.
I see. Okay. Those two had hair that you would stab
it's
yourself.
So
you would stab yourself if they went and came into your salon and said, "Can you give me a blowout?" There's
I'd
no doubt
his
about
head.
It. It's.
I've never seen like the greaser boys with pompadours bigger than that. It's crazy.
Oh my god. Okay, so I just have to recap this so everybody understands what we're dealing with here.
And let me tell you, 25 and 27, they're old for getting married in the gypsy community. Like, that's old.
Wow.
These people usually get married, the girls generally about 16, 17, and the boys usually about 19, 20.
Interesting.
And that's old, yeah.
Okay, so we open with the family, Tatiana's family, eating. It was all girls, and they're all eating a meal. This family enjoys a donut. All they ate was cake and donuts. It was explained that the woman's role is to basically cook for the family. That's her mm-hmm. That's her only obligation. So she's going to get married to this guy. She goes to some seamstress in Missouri, I'm assuming.
Sandra Chelly, she's in Boston.
Oh, she flew there to Boston for her to make what Sandra described as the dress of her career. It had to be the biggest dress that has ever existed. Mm-hmm. The dress ended up being like a bodice top with bedazzlement all over it, mm-hmm. with arm sleeves that were just sort of like hanging chandeliers, and with a tiara, and then the skirt was made from layers and layers of taffeta, which looked like toilet paper at Woodstock or Coachella, like just piles of toilet paper, and there was like some sort of piping that went into the bottoms that stacked up to make it look like a cake.
She generally uses PVC pipe.
That's it.
To create the hoops. Or she'll buy hula hoops or PVC pipe to create the hoops. These dresses weigh upwards of like 60, 70. Sometimes one I saw was like 120 pounds.
This one she said was about 110 pounds. But Sandra's mm-hmm. not the brightest bulb. She made a dress for this girl. She flew out, put it on. By the way, she tried her wedding dress on for the first time wearing a jogging suit. Not a good idea. She put the dress on, and then it took 2 hours, I shit you not, 2 hours to put on, but they didn't figure out how she could actually leave the building with the skirt on. So she had to take it off. The bride was in tears. She had 4 days before her wedding, and they had to figure out how to disassemble the gown so she could actually walk out the front door and get to her own wedding. Then days later, somehow it worked out. She got PVC pipe that could, you know, be
expand and contract. Yeah.
Yes. So she puts the dress on again with jeggings underneath, and she walked a couple miles in the dress with like this fleet of people behind her carrying the dress. Then
it's called they do the gypsy walk down the gypsy bridge. It's that's all what the it brides was. Do it.
That's what it was. I was like, why are they walking? This is insane. Then they are met by a flatbed bed truck with police escort that they put her up on the flatbed truck. Mm-hmm. So she's in this dumb gown on a flatbed truck driving through town, and people, well, there are only four people that live in this town, and they're waving to her, congratulating her on this wedding. Then they arrive to the spot. They got married like next to, I'm like at the back entrance of like maybe a museum. I'm not sure. And the groom just dissolves into a puddle of tears. But notably, the father did not look, he looked pissed. I don't know if he doesn't like the groom, or he was just like, this fucking wedding dress has ruined my life. It's cost me a goddamn mint. And my daughter looks like a pile of toilet paper. He was not happy about it.
That dress, if I'm not mistaken, I believe was totaled to be like $60,000.
Are you shitting me?
I'm not. I mean, think about how much fabric they used. And so if you go to Joann's and you buy a yard of fabric, it's like, what, $20 for that kind of fabric? Now multiply that by 3 football fields worth. That's a lot of freaking money. And all the crystals. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
That is so stupid.
I bought my wedding dress at Macy's for $40. Like, these people are crazy.
Okay, so then they have the reception, and she got rid of the skirt, and then she just had sort of like a sarong on, and they threw plates, whatever.
Mm-hmm. I'm surprised it wasn't bedazzled booty shorts.
If she,
a lot of the brides will do that too.
If they get divorced, does she gets married again? Are they going to spend the same amount of money on a dress?
They don't get divorced.
So they're locked.
Divorce is very locked and loaded. Frowned upon. Yeah. Divorce is very, very frowned upon. And the funny thing is that with divorce being so frowned upon, these people, they'll know each other for 3 weeks and then get married. And then they're stuck. God.
Well, Zuni, that's the guy's name, Zuni. I think I called him Zaki. It's actually Zuni.
Zaki sounds more appropriate.
He said he was really excited to marry Tatiana because she was, although demanding, she was always mm-hmm. there for him, and she could also make a great pot roast.
Oh, pot roast. He lucked out for sure.
This is what these gypsies, that's what this is all about, is how much the woman can, like, how great of a pot roast they can make.
Well, yeah, I mean, they pull these poor girls, I mean, this is their culture, so I can't really pass judgment, I guess, but they pull these girls out of school at like an eighth grade level, and that's really all they go to.
You're not going to pass judgment for a culture that takes their kids out of school in the eighth grade, pays $60,000 for a dress. What?
My culture does weird shit too, so I should probably just keep my mouth shut. But no, they pull these girls out of school, and all they do is stay home and cook and clean and take care of the family, and that's all they do. And they're basically, that's their school, is how to cook and clean.
And make bologna sandwiches.
And make bologna sandwiches on white bread.
Well, I'm going to tell you what their lives are going to be. They're going to be like that old lady grandma wearing the bedazzled pretty girl swag hat mm-hmm. with the no trespassing sign on their door with a cigarette dangling out of their mouth.
You think this is bad? Wait till I have you watch The Gypsy Sisters. That's your next task. It's so much worse. It's the biggest train wreck you'll ever see, and you just can't stop watching.
All right. I'm on to that one. Okay, tell everybody where they can find you on Instagram, etc.
On Instagram, you can find me at hair.by.oc.josie. It's really complicated. Or you can search my hashtag hairbyocjosie. And yeah.
That is too, that Instagram is crazy.
I know, sorry.
Jesus. Okay, are you on Twitter?
I am on Twitter, OC Josie.
OC Josie, awesome.
That's me.
Thank you. I'll see you next week when I get my hair flat ironed.
I'll make sure to block out about 3 hours of time.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Talk to you later.
Bye.
The Amazing Kate Casey.
I want to thank my guests this week, Marguerite Perrin, Christina Gibson, Eric Goldie, and Josie. I want to remind you to go to iTunes and subscribe to my show. Please leave a review. Pass word on to your friends. Right now, I'm running a contest that if you post my picture, the one that's on Instagram, you tag me and use the hashtag #RealityLifeWithKateCasey, you too could be a possible upcoming guest. You can find me on social media. My website is www.loveandknuckles.com. You can find me on Instagram at @KateCaseyCA, Twitter at Kate Casey, and Facebook and Snapchat at Love and Knuckles. If you live in Southern California, you can see me do stand-up Saturday, February 25th at the Gray Matter Museum in Costa Mesa. Have a great week!
Listen to the 48 Hours podcast for shocking murder cases and compelling real-life dramas from one of television's most watched true crime shows. Go behind the scenes of each episode with award-winning CBS News correspondents and producers in Postmortem, a weekly deep dive. Listen to 48 Hours wherever you get your podcasts.